Hi, I'm Dr. Boyce Watkins, and welcome to Financial Lovemaking. This is where we talk about love, life, money, and everything in between. I'm here with my buddy, partner, and co-host, the entertainment director at Ebony Magazine, fresh from the Dr. Oz show, Miss S.T. Brown. How you doing today, Tia?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm fresh off the motherland, you know.
Fresh off the boat.
Yes, fresh off the boat. Loving it. Had a great time in Africa, South Africa, Botswana. I loved it. It was so amazing. You been to the continent?
I have. I've been to South Africa. I went to two cities, Cape Town and Johannesburg. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Yes, yes. Beautiful.
Did you go to Tabletop Mountain?
No, I didn't go to Tabletop.
You go to the jail? To Robben's Island?
No, I didn't get to go to Robben's Island. No, they
did
didn't.
Did you go to the Apartheid Museum?
I went. Yes, I did go to the Apartheid Museum. I also went to Soweto. Nelson Mandela's house.
Isn't that crazy? The things that we think are... describe poverty, nothing in comparison to what like a shanty town looks like. And so I went in like 2008, so I don't know what it looks like then. Like just the whole notion of them bringing electricity to the shanty town was something that was huge in conversation when I was there. And you know, all of this was very much thanks to Nelson Mandela's changes in terms of trying to create more parity. But there was such a huge difference and the economic standards of living that even these small things were huge changes. So it was an enlightening trip for me. And even to learn that, you know, we talk about apartheid in school growing up at different phases. And, you know, you talk about it in elementary school and in high school, and you might revisit it in college. But to be there and to see how it was implemented and to see that only a few, like it was by a small majority that apartheid became the practice in South Africa, but the long-lasting change it had on these people's lives. Yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah, apartheid's amazing, you know, and one thing that's interesting, too, though, is that, you know, we talk about apartheid as if that's what they did and that's their racism, but actually, I don't know if you know this, but actually the United States actually puts more black men in prison than South Africa did during the height of apartheid. And so, and when I was in South Africa and I brought that up, the people there were stunned. They were just amazed. They were like, we looked at these statistics and we don't believe you. They just didn't believe me. They said, there's no way the land of the free would put that many black people in prison. So I think that we can learn from, you know, from the past and the experiences of other countries. And what I loved about South Africa too is that because there's a black majority, and that's a difference, we don't have a majority, because they have a majority, they were able to have these really progressive conversations about race and saying, right, how do we fix, you know, this damage that was done. Whereas in the United States, people don't really talk about race that much. You and I might talk about it now.
But finances is such a big thing. And for me, you know, experiencing, again, like you said, it is the black majority, but still the white minority, because of the legacy of the country, holds the majority of the wealth.
Yes,
so
yes.
So to see another group of people came into your country and they own the mines that have all of the valuable resources. They own all the factories. They, you know, so to me, that was, it's just like, how do you correct that?
Well, you know, that's a tough problem, and it's one that a lot of people feel that Nelson Mandela wasn't able to solve in his lifetime. So maybe in the future people will be able to attack him more directly, because you're right, there was a huge difference in the standard of living for many of the whites than, you know, many of the blacks. So the blacks you saw all across the strata, you know, for example,
right,
for example, Soweto, where Nelson and Winnie Mandela lived, just this amazing, vibrant black community. I mean, it was like Harlem. It was so beautiful, mm-hmm, so much fun, so nice. You know, but then you also have the slums, as you mentioned, the places that just look so horrid that you're just thinking, I can't imagine growing up here. You know,
right,
you know, and but then at the same time, there's just sort of such a, I guess, a broad set of outcomes. And, you know, maybe the future of South Africa will look better than the past. I hope so.
But, It definitely will. And redistribution of wealth, you know, it always comes down to money. That's why financial lovemaking is such a poignant topic, because that's a big deal wherever you go. Finance.
Yes. Yes, and speaking of redistribution of wealth, there are some people who think that if you are married to a wealthy person, they are obligated to redistribute a big chunk of their wealth into your pocket. You and I were talking today about this story that happened. I guess it was London, because everything was in pounds.
Right.
Where there's a wealthy horse surgeon who got a divorce, and he was ordered to pay his wife basically the British equivalent of $112,000 a year. That's $10,000 a month for just all of her living expenses, child support, you know, starting, I think they had two kids.
Right.
But then he also had to pay for, you know, he gave her a house that was worth maybe $800,000. He had to give her stables for her horses and all these other necessities, right? And she didn't want to go to work. She was like, I don't, why should I work? I got a sugar daddy. He's going to hook me up. And she went to court, and it was her husband took her to court, and he said, look, I'm about to retire. I can't afford to keep maintaining the lifestyle to which this woman has become accustomed. And the judge said, I agree with you. You know,
Yeah, right.
you're grown. Your kids are over seven. Get a job. Get a damn job.
Absolutely.
That's what the judge told her.
Well, there's some interesting variables in this case. First of all, I think it's funny that the couple's last name is Wright. So Mr. and the former Mrs. Wright. What's right for Mr. and Mrs. Wright, right? So the couple was only married for 11 years. They divorced in 2008. And since then, she has not worked. Now, you know, the children were smaller when they initially divorced, but now they're older. And what the judge is saying is, you know, yes, you are still entitled to child support and some spouse support, but it doesn't have to be at this rate because you are of able mind and body, and you can get out and generate some income on your own if you want to live at this tremendous standard. And honestly, you know, I think it's absolutely fair. In the divorce, it seemed that things were split very equitably, right? So she got a huge portion or a fair portion. I'm not going to say huge because that's kind of, you know, biased. A fair portion of the estate. And the husband is not disputing child support income. You know, he's like, you know, I'll pay for what's necessary for my kids. However, I don't think that I have to give you an allowance at this level for life, because you can earn some money of your own. Now the question is, what is a fair amount? And from the articles that we've seen thus far, we don't see what the updated amount would be. Her spousal support at this time was about $50,000 US approximately. And he's just saying, listen, you know, she's only 51. I'm about to retire. She has chosen not to work. And she's also saying that she wants to live an A plus lifestyle. We chose to get a divorce. Am I
Interesting.
still required to give that A plus for the entirety of her life to my detriment? And
Well,
I agree with the judge, no.
you know, I do think that it is interesting when you sort of look at the dynamics of marriage and you hear about these couples where one partner agrees to stay home to take care of the home and the children, and the other partner goes and builds their career. You know, it's the specialization, right, that occurs in
Right.
marriage. And sometimes it can be really ugly if the divorce hits because you know, you've got one person who has specialized in making money, another person who specialized in making a home, and one kind of needs the other, right? So, and it's easier, I think, to replace a homemaker than it is to replace a provider at the six-figure level. I mean, I really think that it's tougher to find somebody that's gonna, you know, bring the bacon and give it to you. And so it makes you wonder, you know, how does this fit into the traditional dynamic of marriage, and how do you merge that with you know, the very legitimate push for equal rights for women, where, you know, you've got a whole push for, you know, among women's groups saying, look, we want equal rights, equal opportunities, we can do equal anything to what men do. So now some people are saying, look, well, okay, if you want equal rights and you're equal to us, then you can equally work just like we do. And some people might say, well, maybe that's not necessarily the best thing. I mean, maybe, you know, maybe it's not so good that we're going to put all this pressure on mothers to abandon their children to go to work every day, when maybe society's better off if they are able to spend more time with their kids. So I don't know. I mean, it's a really tough thing, right? You know, I tend to be more of a traditionalist in the sense that I would forgive a good homemaker for not going out and working and not bringing home the bacon. You know, because if I've got kids with you and you're taking good care of my kids and taking good care of the home, and even if I'm not married to you anymore and you're raising my kids properly, then I should pay a little bit more to have that, right? But it's like, what's right and what's wrong? I think a lot of people are very confused right now. No one knows what to expect, because I don't know if it's right
I
to
think
look at
it's a
this woman and say, I'm sorry, I get the last, I'll get this last sentence out, I
sorry.
promise. That's okay. You know, I don't know if it's necessarily right to look at this woman who has been a homemaker all these years, who's got this husband who's the horse surgeon. Clearly, he's better at making the money, and then saying, no, you know, we know you had one life plan, you prepare for that, but now you got a totally different life plan. Now you got to get out here and hustle like everybody else and make your minimum wage or whatever, and just get by however you can.
Yeah, I don't think it's about necessarily right or wrong. I think it's about what's fair and reasonable. So again, it would be different if he was throwing her out to the wolves. You know, he gave her a large home that's paid for, and she will still get some income. But I also think it's important to think about what's fair, big picture, for both parties. Is it fair for him to have to sustain her at a certain level, you know, for the rest of his life? And I am definitely a proponent of women's rights, and I also think that homemakers have value. I don't totally agree with you in saying that, you know, okay, it might be hard. Fewer people make six figures, but I do think that, you know, it is hard to replace a great homemaker as well. So I think that they both have equal value in the relationship, but the relationship is over. And, you know, and that's the hard thing for people to realize. Yes, when you get married, you plan for forever, but sometimes it's forever, ever, never seems so long until you're
Well,
grown, right? That's a,
right. And I
so
think
now
that.
that forever has changed, you have to be able to make new plans. Now, one of the great things that I think was done in this situation is that she's had a transition period. So it hasn't been, oh, we got divorced, and now you have to fend for yourself. They've been divorced for 6 years. And you've been receiving this amount of money. So I think now it is time for you to make a different transition plan. And I think that's fair for both parties.
Well, you know, and I think you're right, and we, you know, I think we can definitely have that conversation about, you know, what's more valuable between the homemaker versus the breadwinner. And I think it depends on the relationship. I think it depends on how much bread you make and how good of a homemaker you
They
are.
both have value.
Right? They both absolutely, no question about it. In fact, I always say that the mother has the most important job in the world. I think the mother shapes the trajectory of a child's life, but. The interesting thing too is that it's clear that homemaking and breadwinning complement each other, but the question is, you know, what happens when there is no relationship? Which is more, which would you rather be if the relationship fails? Would you rather be the breadwinner or would you rather be the homemaker? I'd rather be the breadwinner because I think the breadwinner is going to be safe. He or she is going to be able to pay the bills. The homemaker kind of needs a breadwinner to sustain the ability to make a home, right? It's
And
like
that speaks highly to the values of certain people, right? Because usually the breadwinner doesn't have the kids in mind, right? So if you were the breadwinner and you just had and the homemaker disappeared, now you have to worry about nurturing the kids, which in the big picture is the most important job ever because it's great to make money, but you're responsible for these lives you brought into the world. And without a nurturer, that can't be done.
Well, absolutely, and you know, in a way, I almost see it like a hot dog bun, you know, relationship, right? You need the hot dog and you need the bun together. But the question is, what if you pull them apart? Which would you rather have, the bun or the hot dog? You know, some people will say I'd rather have the meat, right? And so, you know, even though the meat doesn't taste as good without the bun, I can put a piece of bread on it or whatever.
Right.
But you know, but in all seriousness, though, I think that you know, it's. If you really just look at the raw, you know, tradition in terms of what has historically occurred, I think that there's always been kind of an expectation for men to be able to be breadwinners and for women to be able to be homemakers. You know, it's like I think a man is less likely to be forgiven for being a deadbeat when it comes to, like Chris Rock used to say, if the lights are out, that's daddy's fault, right?
You can't read.
Right, but if the kids can't read or the kids are dirty, that's mama's fault, you know.
Right.
But you know, but people are starting to question that, I guess. I guess we're kind of going into these divorce battles, kind of with this, you know, sort of expectation that everything's equal and that I can tell a mother with two kids to go back to work, and that's the same as me telling a father with no kids. When the truth is, having kids does change that dynamic. It makes going to work a much more complicated
It
process.
does, but she's not. I think the
Right,
thing that we're not discussing in this is that she's still getting money, and no one said that she has to become, you know, a lawyer, right? Just generate some income because you want to live on a certain level, and I don't think I should be responsible for maintaining that. They're not saying no alimony. They're just saying no point.
Is the judge going to keep giving her money? I mean, even
Right,
because
so.
he wanted a reduction because he's about to retire. Is the judge still going to give him money even in retirement, or does the judge take everything away?
Well, they said they have to reconsider the amount that he's given because in most states, to my knowledge, and I know this is across the sea, across you know, it's in London, it's overseas. Until you remarry, until the woman remarries, she still gets alimony in typical situations unless something else is specified in the divorce decree, right? So they're not saying no, they're just saying we're going to modify the amount. And this woman also receives enough money that she could live off of the child support alone, invest it, and not have to worry about working even after her kids become of age. But if
Oh,
you want to live like a multimillionaire and you're no longer in that situation, if your contract is null and void, now you can't expect to reap the benefits of a contract that doesn't exist. And I think that that's the reality check that some people have to have.
And that's the interesting thing about marriage to me, though, too, is that even if you don't stay married, marriage to some extent can still be a lifetime commitment. Mm-hmm. Having a child can still be a lifetime commitment, even if you don't, the relationship doesn't last. And I think that's something for people to think about. You know, that if you get married, you get a divorce, it's going to be very expensive for you to deal with that. And to some extent, you know, sociologists even compare it to polygamy. They say that, you know, men that get married multiple times, they're kind of inadvertently, subconsciously, perhaps practicing polygamy because they get to a point where they're taking care of multiple households at one time, mm-hmm. right? And so I would say that's important for people, anybody to remember, male or female, especially if you plan to be the breadwinner. When you get married, your bread will always be getting eaten by somebody else on some level for the rest of your life.
But also be cooking, helping you cook that bread and cook the bacon and the eggs and all of those things.
Well, that too, of course. Absolutely. But, you know, the other thing I'll say, is, and this is my last point on this, is that I believe that when you get married, you should also imagine all contingency plans, all alternative possibilities. What if we stay married and we live happily ever after? What if we get divorced one day in the future? You know, what is that going to look like? So, you know, if you talk about somebody that says, oh, well, my spouse is going to go to medical school and make plenty of money for us and we're going to be good. Well, ask yourself, what happens if your spouse finishes medical school and then dumps you? Which happens all the time. Yes. Are you
15 years into the marriage? Reconsiders.
Yes. Are you legally protected? Are you financially protected? You know, what are your options at that point? Because I've seen a lot of people get screwed that way. And I just think that, you know, overinvesting in another person is always kind of a risky thing. So you want to make sure you're protected. So that's my last thought on that.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that point. Happily, we finally agree on something. But we'd love to hear what you guys think.
But I'm still right.
I'm just a little more right. We'd like to hear what you guys think about this topic. As always, thanks for listening and watching. Have a great day.